politics, and then I gave up politics because I didn't think there was much reason to be involved, and it didn't seem like there were many people who would be excited to be involved working for. But then Ro came to me about 6 months ago and told me a little bit about why he wanted to be a member of Congress. And in the past 6 months, I've watched him build a campaign around ideas that are extraordinarily unpopular in America today, like civil liberties, or anti-war, or the Anti-Patriot Act ideas, and the willingness to openly embrace the idea of rights for same-sex couples, including the right to marry for same-sex couples. This is an extraordinary kind of campaign, which I thought, at least in this district, in this part of the country, we ought to be able to embrace openly, because our congressman, despite the fact that 82% of our neighbors don't support the war, voted for the war, and despite the fact that almost 70% don't support the Patriot Act, has twice voted for the Patriot Act. That's not the kind of congressman that we need to represent this district. So I went with Ro to one of his town hall meetings and watched him persuade people about values and ideals that were ours. And for the first time in many years, I felt that chill of excitement that goes with the best in politics. So I'm extremely happy to welcome him to this house and to welcome you to the beginning of his campaign, which on March 2nd will be victorious in this district. This party is being hosted by a good friend of mine and I, Jeff Bleich. Jeff is a friend from many, many years ago when he and I worked for the far right at the Supreme Court. We've been paying off our debts ever since, and so let me introduce Jeff to say a few words and then introduce Ro.
You know, I have to get one of these for myself. Bring around with me wherever I go. Brilliant. You're here to hear Ro, so I will be brief. But for those of you who don't know Ro, I'll give a little bit of quick background. I've known Ro relatively briefly. I knew him when I interviewed him for a job. He had already established himself as a brilliant graduate of the University of Chicago, another, you know, hotbed of liberalism.
You can skip over some part.
Then he went to Yale Law School, where he was top of the class again, got a wonderful clerkship, and then landed a job with Munger, Tolles & Olson, where we worked together. And, I do have a conflict of interest because, you know, as you can imagine, being a partner at a law firm, I am just constantly losing associates to running for Congress. So this has been, in this case, what convinced me to not only support Ro, but support him without hesitation is two things. First, that he thrilled Larry Lessig. And, you know, there have only been two people I know, but Tina's the other one, so I think this has got to be special. And the other is exactly what Larry was saying. You know, Ro has the passion, and he speaks truth. He says exactly what he means, he means what he says, and he says the things that I think most of the people in this district believe in. They believe in diplomacy, they believe in trying to stop war by building peace, by making more friends than you have enemies. They believe in an inclusive society. They believe in civil rights. And in everything that Ro and I did together during his brief time at the firm, it was committed to that, whether it was working on a case together for a person who was being kicked out of her house in public housing, whether it was working on the Patriot Act and challenging provisions of that. Ro attacked that with a passion and a zeal and an intelligence that we need in Congress and that we haven't had enough of in the last 25 years in this district. So Ro, I'm there for you, and I hope everyone else is here. One thing that you should know about Ro is that he is running against someone who has been in Congress for 25 years and is outspending him 3-1. So not only does he need our support, he needs our financial support and anything that we can do to help him. I think we'll make this a better country. So, Ro.
You don't need that.
I'm just gonna, my whole point is to be a grassroots candidate. So
thank you so much, Larry, for having this. It really means a lot that you've gotten involved in this campaign, and I'm really grateful for all your support. And Jeff, it's really means a lot. I did research for Larry Lessig as a law student, and would never have imagined that he would be introducing me in running for Congress. And I worked for you, and really am grateful that you're here. I want to share why this election is so important to me, why I'm running for Congress, and then open it up to a discussion about how we can change politics in this country. After September 11th, we had the sympathy of the entire world. People were laying flowers outside American embassies. And 2 short years later, people are protesting and marching outside American embassies. And the reason for that is the choices that we've made as a country. President Bush, after September 11th, had a golden opportunity to articulate a vision for America that was going to gain us international allies, international respect, to capitalize on the sympathy that people felt for our pain, and to say that America was going to act in a way that was multilateral, that was going to bring in other nations to deal with the problems of terrorism, that was going to deal with the root causes of terrorism, human suffering around the world, poverty, that was going to deal with promoting democracy. But instead of that path, he chose a path of us versus them. He chose a path of unilateralism and confrontation. And as a result, I think our country has suffered. The Pew Charitable Studies did a poll that shows that public sentiment in the Middle East, in anti-American sentiment in the past 2 years, has increased from 60% to 85 to 90%. We're losing the war on terrorism because of these policies. And I think as a Democratic Party, we need to have a vision for an alternate, provide an alternative vision for national security. We need to say that we aren't afraid of talking about what the real threats to this country are. And it's not that there's going to be a weapon of mass destruction launched across the border that's going to hit San Mateo County. That's not the real threat to our country. The threat is that there could be an anthrax letter that comes to San Francisco International Airport, or that someone may drive a bomb across the border. And we need to say that the way to deal with those problems is to invest. Instead of spending billions of dollars on a war in Iraq, we should be investing in port security, investing in our firefighters, investing in local police, having policies that are going to lessen anti-American sentiment, providing foreign aid to countries where there's large suffering, and so that America is perceived as caring about the rest of the world, building coalitions. And I think that the Democratic Party, if we want to become a governing party in this country, if we want to be a party that's going to recapture the youth, recapture the imagination, we need to have the courage to offer an alternative vision for our view of what's going to make this country safe and prosperous in the 21st century. And that's what Tom Lantos hasn't done. Tom Lantos has supported President Bush and Tom DeLay in their vision for national security. He has said that it was his honor, privilege to manage the Iraq resolution on behalf of the president. He called Tom DeLay a good friend and bragged about the votes that Tom DeLay delivered for the president and said that he regretted that he couldn't deliver as many Democratic votes. He's been the biggest ally of this president and the neoconservatives in constructing the doctrine of preventive war. And my view is that if from the Bay Area, from one of the most progressive places in the country, if we can't have a voice in our elected body that's going to say no to the president's foreign policy, that's going to say we have a different vision, then from where? 82% of us disagree with this president. 82%. 82% of us disagree with our congressman. If democracy works, this election should be a landslide. If we can't beat an incumbent congressman who's voting for a vision of America we disagree with, then what does that say about democracy? And that's why I knew I had a chance when I got into this election, because I still have faith in democracy. I want to talk also about the Patriot Act, which is an issue very close to me. Jeff mentioned that I had done some work at the law firm, and this past summer I got a call from Umar Farouk, a law school classmate of mine. And Umar's brother is Muslim-American and isn't a citizen, but had been in this country for 10 years. He went to MIT and got a, you know, engineering degree and was on a visa to this country, a permanent visa. And he was detained by the federal government. He was put in solitary confinement for 2 days. He was denied access to a lawyer. And he was told that he should go back to where he belongs. And now he was eventually let out because Umar Farouk happened to be a law school graduate and had enough knowledge about the law that he could make the right phone calls to get his brother out. But Umar is no longer patriotic about this country, and he was one of the most patriotic people I knew in law school. And I want to know why we're destroying the American ideal for people like Umar Farouk. I want to know why we're repeating the same mistakes that we made with the Japanese internment camps and McCarthyism. America of the 21st century is so much better than that. We're so much better than the Patriot Act. We're so much better than John Ashcroft's policies. And when I found out that Tom Lantos has supported these policies of the Patriot Act and of the Ashcroft policies of hauling up Arab Americans because that's what they think is in the national security interest, I said someone needs to challenge him. And this campaign is going to send a very clear message. The ethnic and racial profiling of Americans is absolutely unacceptable. The detentions are unacceptable. And we as a country are much more principled than having to resort to those tactics. The biggest challenge, the polls, we've closed the gap. I started out at 0%, and my message has been resonating around the district. I'm about 10, you know, between polls, between 6 to 10 points down, 32% to 26% the latest poll, the rest are undecided. Every one mailer I send, Tom Lantos has been sending 3 mailers. He's outspending me about 3-1 in the district. The only reason he's going to win if he wins this election is because of money and name recognition. The reason I'm going to win is because we have 150 volunteers. We've got young people who, for the first time, care about the direction their country is going in. And we have citizens who, for the first time, are active in politics. This election, the amount of sacrifice that people have made for me to be where I am. I've had my friend Marco Simons quit his job in Los Angeles to come out here for 3 months to work on this campaign. I've had people from around the country come leaving their jobs because they believe in what we're doing. We've had citizens in this community who've never been active before because they believe America needs a different direction. We're going to win this campaign based on grassroots support, based on word of mouth. I really need your help. I need your passion. I need you to help talk to friends about what we're trying to do, to get active. If you believe and agree with what we're fighting for, then let's do this. Let's send a signal to the Democratic Party and to the country that democracy can work, that people still have a voice, that representative government means something, and that a congressman should represent the people he's elected to serve. Thank you.
Or on those two coattails for Kerry if he remains the front runner?
Kerry's coattails? Mm-hmm. You mean whether I would ride Kerry's coattails?
If he has them, what would they be, and can you ride them?
Well, you know, I mean, I was counting on riding Dean's coattails.
You can ride them too if you want to.
I was to me, I was and continue to support Howard Dean. I think he had the courage to speak out against the war and speak out against the Patriot Act in the very first instance and energize a group of people who never were involved in politics. That said, I recognize, you know, that John Kerry may be the nominee, and John Kerry, I think, has done an extraordinary, you know, has an extraordinary record on a lot of issues that I care about, namely the environment. I mean, he's talked about having higher CAFE standards when it wasn't popular, about fuel efficiency. He's talked about issues of increasing foreign aid. On the war, John Kerry also, I think, has articulated a position that is different from where Tom Lantos is. And John Kerry has said that he believes very strongly that we need to internationalize the presence in Iraq, that we need a foreign policy of cooperation and not confrontation, that the Bush administration and neoconservative agenda is arrogant and not the right vision, and most importantly, that he's against the doctrine of preventive war, so that if there's not an imminent threat to our national security, we shouldn't be going out and attacking other countries. And that is a position that Tom Lantos has not taken. I mean, Tom Lantos has embraced the doctrine of preventive war and will publicly say that. And so I think to the extent that Kerry has appeal on the foreign policy issues, and it is because many people in this district will agree with him that that we shouldn't have this doctrine of preventive war. And Kerry's also taken a very strong stance against the Patriot Act and has recognized, he's one of the Democrats that's recognized that the Democratic Party made a mistake in supporting that. So, you know, I think Kerry has come to recognize that for us to be a governing party and to beat George Bush, we need to offer something different. I mean, the reason we lost in 2002 was because we didn't have a message. We had half our Democrats voting for the war and half opposing them. We didn't have the guts, except Mike Conda, not a single Democrat in this area voted against the Initial Patriot Act. And I want a Democratic Party that's going to stand for something and that's not going to be afraid to lose an election. But articulate principles. That's how the conservatives built the movement. Barry Goldwater was the forerunner of conservatism because he stood for something. And we need liberals and progressives in this country who are going to build a party that stands for something. And then the elections will take care of themselves.
You know, one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that it's amazingly easy to get a letter published in the newspaper if you just write one. They get very few good letters, and if everybody in this room write a letter to your local newspaper, several newspapers, you'll probably get them all published. It's so easy, and especially if you do it by email. Because
if you go to our website and click on action,
you have the email addresses for the local newspapers.
Email addresses for all the local newspapers.
Yeah. The trick is to keep it short. You know, 2-3 paragraphs. The shorter, the better. On point. You know, make it interesting, and it gets published. You know, it's extremely easy. You know, I've been published, you know, in USA Today, San Francisco Chronicle, and I'm not that much of a writer. You know, I just keep doing it. And so write letters. You know, it's free and it works. So,
Rove, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What aside from the war, what are the other basic issues you disagree with Lantos on, and in particular, I'm curious about what view you take about Israel. I know he's got some very strong views about that.
So I'll answer your second question first. I think that Israel is a strong ally of the United States. It's we have to recognize the suffering of the Jewish people and make sure that Israel is secure and a safe state, and the security of Israel has to be a paramount concern, and it's also a strong democratic ally. So I'm very pro-Israel. That said, I'll say two things. One, just because we're pro-Israel doesn't mean that we should be oblivious to the human suffering of the Palestinian people. There are Palestinians who don't have basic water, who don't have basic resources. In the United States, we can provide a large aid to our ally Israel, and we can also provide aid, humanitarian aid, to the Palestinian people. There's nothing that says that we have to be inhumane in our outlook to that to Palestine. The other thing is that there are two camps in Israel. There's a camp of the peace camp, which believes that reconciliation with the Palestinians is in the long-term interest of the world and of Israel. And then there's the camp which believes that military force is the answer, just like there are two camps in the United States. There's the peace camp and a multilateral camp and a camp of George Bush. And I, just like I believe in multilateralism and reconciliation cooperation in the United States, I think that's also the policy that Israel should pursue, because that, I think, is ultimately in the long-term interest of Israel. And so, you know, I guess if there are specific questions about a particular issue, you know, I can address it. But my basic philosophy is that we have to be very pro-Israel, but recognize that you can be pro-Israel in many ways. And being pro-Israel doesn't mean being pro-Ariel Sharon.
What about the other issues where you part ways with Lantos?
I disagree with Tom Lantos on education. He supported the No Child Left Behind Act, which I think was a huge mistake. Not only, I mean, the argument now that a lot of Democrats are making is we would never have supported the No Child Left Behind Act if it was fully funded. But I think that's a false premise. Even if the No Child Left Behind Act was fully funded, it would only account for 10% of a school district's budget. And the draconian sanctions for a failing school are so severe. I mean, it basically is a move towards the state takeover of public schools. And there's no way you can do that on the budget that the federal government had provided, even if No Child Left Behind was fully funded. So I think that if I were in Congress, my first priority would be to increase resources for public schools. And that, I think, is the real issue facing public education, not just to have higher rigorous standardized testing. I also think that there is a fundamental difference between Tom Lantos and me on issues of technology. And I don't think there's much more to being a congressman than voting, just voting. It's also about what you propose. One of the things I think we as a country need to do is invest in broadband technology. We spend $217 million in this country building highways and roads. It would cost about $35 billion to have broadband around the country and have every home hooked up to high-speed internet. This is something that if you go to Silicon Valley, almost every technology leader would say the one thing we need to do to prevent outsourcing of jobs, to create new job growth, is to invest in broadband. And I think that from a large part of Silicon Valley, we need a congressman who's going to advocate those issues. And Tom Lantos has been absent on those issues. I have a different view of Tom Lantos on certain social issues. He's been for a flag burning, an amendment against burning the flag. I think that that's an issue of free speech. He has not, and I think the biggest difference too is also a difference of style. Tom Lantos has made his focus and priority in Congress foreign policy. He hasn't been focused and addressed a lot of local concerns about affordable housing, about education. If you talk to people in the community, many of them haven't seen him in town hall meetings. He probably was in town hall meetings when he was first running for Congress. But he's been there 24 years, and he started to take things for granted. And I think being someone fresh and new and someone who's, I would be someone who would be really engaged in the community. I'd show up to a lot of public forums. I want to have a lot of town hall meetings. I want to address local issues and local concerns. And I think those are that's as a style and what I bring to Congress, those are the fundamental differences.
Thanks. How has your message been received by the sort of party apparatus, by the DNC?
So the local, I've gotten a lot of endorsements from local officials. The Stephen Ibarra, who's a member of the DNC, is actually a senior consultant on my campaign. Agar Jakes, who some of you may know, is a DNC member, endorsed me. Chris Daly, who's a San Francisco supervisor, has endorsed me. There are a number of other local officials or Democrats who have endorsed me. The party leadership, Nancy Pelosi, is going to have to endorse Tom Lantos, because that's her job as minority leader, to protect incumbents. But there are a lot of people in the local Bay Area delegation who do not agree with Tom Lantos, who do not like Tom Lantos, who would be happy to see him go. We're not going to openly come out and support me, but we're not going to work against me or mobilize against me, because they think that Tom Lantos doesn't represent the best of the Democratic Party.
And Matt Gonzalez, too.
And Matt Gonzalez is endorsing. Yeah.
I have a question. Just basically a campaigning question. I think the recent mayoral race, it doesn't matter who you supported, but it proved that input funding doesn't necessarily equal the votes that came out of it, which is great news, obviously, for you. So, but speaking as a young voter, I think one of the problems with congressional races is that it's not localized to what we believe and what we care in. Like, how can we bring that message of how someone in Congress can actually affect our lives on a day-to-day basis? Because that's where the grassroots organizations start to build.
Well, I mean, I think that the war affects all of our lives in a sense of we're spending billions of dollars in Iraq and in maintaining a huge defense budgets for the war, which we could be spending on education, on providing scholarships so people can attend college, on creating affordable housing so that young people don't have to leave San Mateo County or parts of San Francisco because they can't afford to live here. And a congressperson can be active on issues of education, housing, and make a real difference in the community if that's what he or she chooses to do. I think one of the reasons that we people your age don't think of a congressperson as having an impact on local communities is because most congressmen aren't active in the local community. And I think a congressperson who was actually engaged in the local community, who paid attention to local issues, who was out and active in the community, could change that perception and get people excited again about politics and about the congressional races. But do you have any ideas?
Cause, I think of some.
Ro, can I ask you, you distinguish your view on Iraq from Representative Lantos's. If you get to Congress, what do you think you can do? Obviously, there's growing opposition
sure.
to the war, but how can you actually put it into play?
Sure. Well, one is the first is I eliminate a countervailing force. I mean, Tom Lantos is the ranking member of the International Relations Committee and is actively supporting President Bush's policy. So just by not having him there, I think we move a step forward. Second, I think now that we're in Iraq, it's our duty to stay. I don't think we can just abandon Iraq. And, you know, we bombed the country. We've destabilized the region, and to advocate just a complete withdrawal of troops right now, I think is irresponsible. If I were in Congress, I would introduce legislation for the Iraq Economic Development Act, which I would say is that we should involve France, Germany, Canada, other countries that want to have a part in reconstruction and invest in education in Iraq, invest in building an infrastructure in Iraq, invest in building a stable government in Iraq. And instead, what we've been doing is spending $87 billion, which I think are largely handouts to Bechtel and Halliburton. And so my view would be, let's invest resources in Iraq. We have a moral duty to stay there. We can't just abandon the people, but let's do reconstruction in a way which, one, involves our allies, two, is targeted to really helping the Iraqi people towards self-determination, and three, involves the United Nations in a international governing authority. And one point, I mean, the Bush administration now is talking about having Kofi Annan go in there and have an international authority, but I don't think the Bush administration can be trusted. I mean, there has to be a check on making sure that they follow through with what they're going to do. And I'll tell you, if I'm in Congress, I will be constantly making sure and advocating a policy of international reconstruction and making sure that the administration lives up to what it's going to say and having a vigorous opposition to a policy of unilateralism. And I don't think Tom Lantos would have that. So I'm not naive, I'm not going to change U.S. foreign policy, but I think I can start building a voice of opposition to what these policies are.
Yeah. You said you support Howard Dean, I support Howard Dean. There probably are different opinions in this room about his candidacy, but one thing that probably most, if not all of us, might agree on is that, tactically at least, he has revolutionized campaigning and his use of the internet. And I'm wondering, tactically, if you have appropriated similar ideas in the way you have organized your campaign and the way you are doing outreach.
Well, I went one better than Howard Dean. I got Larry Lessig on my side. and Larry's post on the blog, you know, spawned. I was an anonymous internet person until you posted the blog, and now I've got people, kind of the idiot, kind of, you know, ultra-liberal all over the internet. So I think that the I think that the internet is an extraordinarily powerful tool for campaigns for two reasons. One, we've raised about $60,000-$70,000 on the internet, which is not the millions of dollars that Howard Dean's raising, but is about 25% of everything we've raised, and a lot of that has come from people who've been giving $100 donations, $150 donations, and these are people who wouldn't receive mailers, fundraising solicitations, because they're not the high-end donors. And so what the internet has allowed is for ordinary citizens to participate in giving to political candidates, and that's something that we've used as a fundraising technique. We have a campaign called the 2020 campaign, where we said 20,000 people give $20. We haven't gotten close to getting 20,000 people to do that, but we've gotten a lot of $20 contributions from both within the district and the internet and from outside, people who agree with our issues. I'm blogging on the internet, and people are paying attention to that. They are feel like they can participate in a online community. And the biggest thing, I think, is also the accessibility to a politician. I get about 50 emails every night from citizens asking questions on the internet, and those are people who would never probably have asked me anything or met me in person, but they have the opportunity to interact with a candidate for Congress, and it's very simple for me to reply to a lot of them. And so I think that what the internet does is give politicians a real opportunity to connect with citizens in more ways. But do you have anything to add to this?
His blog is under a Creative Commons license too, which is
What's the address?
It's www.voterow.com.
There's a blog. There's a link to the blog part of it on that. That itself is just a standard web page.
Yes, and there's a link to the blog.
Along those lines, in terms of raising money, it has fallen to me to point out that
the doors are locked.
Nobody leaves.
We don't charge you for getting in, we charge you.
Campaigns do cost money. It costs money to get the message out. And it'll cost us, you know, $40,000 or more to make sure that every voting household has a mailer from Roe. We need to do this several times, you know, in order to make sure that everybody knows where Roe stands. It costs money to print our signs and our leaflets and door hangers and everything. So if you can give, and give generously, we would be very grateful. No donation is too small. We would prefer that no donation be too large, but the federal government says that we can't accept anything over $2,000. So we have contribution forms here.